Welcome to How to Make It Work, the radio show and podcast where we dive into real stories of people making life work in their own unique way. I'm your host, Annika. Let's get started.
Welcome back to How to Make It Work. I'm really excited for this week's episode because we will talk a lot about journalism, which is also my background. With me in the studio is Michael Andrew. He is the owner and editor of On the Land. On the Land is an independent print magazine, and it's all about people living closely with the land across Aotearoa. He bought the magazine for just $1 and rebranded it, and that was 2 years ago, and somehow he's not only making it work, he's growing it, all while living out in Ruapuki and learning about life on the land himself. Michael, it's so good to have you on the show.
Thanks, Annika. Nice to be here.
I want to know a bit more about your personal journey. What brought you out here to Ruapuki and Raglan community?
Well, I had family in Raglan, and I'm from West Auckland originally, but we came down here, me and my partner, for a trip and spent time with our family here, and then just had a drive out to Ruapuki and saw a plot of land. And yeah, we'd always been keen to live in or around Raglan and live quite rural. So yeah, it was just a beautiful plot, and we kind of fell in love with it straight away. It's looking over the beach, and it's really just spectacular in terms of scenery. So we made the impulsive decision to buy it. And yeah, that's kind of how we started our journey in Raglan.
And when was that?
That was 2021. So yeah, about 4 or 5 years ago now.
And have you settled in, you think?
Yeah, well, we just bought the land, and it was a bare block, and we couldn't really do much with it at first. So just using it as a campground and planting trees and putting shelter in, because it's really exposed. It's on a hilltop, and all the while saving to build a house. And that took a few years as well. But living at my mother-in-law's house in the meantime, and yeah, saving whatever money we could.
And when you say using it as a camp spot, did you actually camp there?
Yeah, no, we just pitched some tents when it was sunny weather, and yeah, it was perfect.
With the whole family, you have a partner and two kids, I think?
Yeah, yeah. Well, at the time we only had the one, and so we camped a few times, yeah, when it was really nice, and it was just awesome.
Yeah. Pretty close to the land, I'd say.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's been great for them to just get immersed in that whole process from the beginning.
How was your life like before? Have you always been living close to the land, or was it like a complete change?
Not really in the same way, like always kind of hiking and tramping and kind of living semi-rural where we were. But no, I didn't grow up farming or anything, so it's all been a learning journey for me in terms of you know, what everything you'd do on a lifestyle block in terms of keeping animals and yeah, hobby farming and growing food and that type of thing, planting trees. So yeah, it's all been a massive learning, and that's the whole part of the journey, I suppose.
So your professional background is journalism. Tell me more about that. What kind of steps did you go to the point that you actually bought your own magazine and now you're running your own magazine?
So I did journalism quite late. I was in different jobs throughout my career, just, you know, dabbling, I suppose. And then I did a postgraduate diploma at AUT, and I got my first job at the spin-off and, yeah, different kind of media entities. But it was through COVID. I started basically the same day as the COVID lockdowns.
Oh, wow.
So that was the start of my journalism career. And the COVID thing was really weird for journalism, I think. I wasn't particularly enjoying kind of focusing on that type of thing. So I was fortunately doing business journalism, which was able to look away from all that and focus on, like, you know, businesses struggling and that type of thing. And it was nice to get some breathing space. But I saw the job for a magazine as editor of the Lifestyle Block magazine come up, and I hadn't heard of the magazine before. So I applied for it because it seemed like a great opportunity to have this job and have my land at the same time and combine the two, so that I'd be learning on the land and sharing about it in the magazine. It seemed like the perfect way to kind of work and get paid for actually, you know, planting trees and that type of thing. So yeah, I applied for the job and I got it, and I switched over from kind of journalism into magazine journalism as editor of New Zealand Lifestyle Block. And then, kept doing that. And then a couple of years later, the opportunity came up to buy it because a lot of magazines are struggling and this one wasn't, the company that owned this one wasn't doing very well. And yeah, I thought I'd take it on and just make it my own and see if what I could do with it. And yeah, it's been awesome. I love it.
Mm. So that's a bit of the hen and egg question. What came first? That you bought the land out at Ruapuki and wanted to learn more about on the land, or that you first got into that type of journalism and then you bought the land?
So yeah, I got the land. I'd always wanted to live rural and I'd always wanted to do this type of thing. So it was the passion for that that came first. And then that led to the magazine because I saw the job and I saw the job description and it just was like perfectly aligned with what I was doing with my beer block in terms of figuring out how to be a really good custodian of a piece of land and nurture it and bring it back to life, like plant trees and restore biodiversity. And then also longer term grow food and create kind of closed loop systems. So it just seemed, yeah, it just seemed like the stars aligned and it was the perfect way to do a job that really aligned what I was doing out of work as well. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like if you're a surfer and you know, a job comes up at a surfing magazine, it would be, you know, like, just the dream come true, really, because you get to surf and then write about it.
Yeah, combining the passion at work.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So what was your inspiration to do journalism? Because you said you've done some other things beforehand and started quite late.
It was just a kind of general love of writing that I did kind of for leisure throughout my life. Just like journaling and, like poetry or whatever, short story writing, fiction. And then I got a column for a local magazine out West Auckland, writing about different kind of hikes and walks out there. And I just kept doing that and getting more freelance gigs. So that kind of one thing led to another. And I thought I should take the plunge full time into journalism. And that's exactly what I did.
Hmm. And then you bought the magazine for just $1, which sounds amazing. I mean, $1. Usually when you buy a regular print magazine, that's more than just a dollar, and then you bought the whole company, so to say. But what actually came with that?
Well, media entities are quite funny. When they do go to sale, you just have to put a figure because it's like stuff sold a few years ago for $1, and it's this massive organization, and it's obviously got a lot of kind of incomes and expenses that come with it. So, but the easiest thing to do is just to put a dollar on the sale contract. And that's exactly what happened with my magazine, because you're not only taking on the incomes, but you're also taking on the liabilities as well, all the expenses and the fact that you've got, I don't know, like 2,000 subscribers to honor their subscriptions over so and so years. So yeah, it gets a little bit complicated, but essentially you're taking on you're taking on the magazine, you're getting all that subscription income, retail income, but you're also getting, you've also got a commitment to honor those subscriptions throughout, you know, a year or 2 years or however long people have subscribed.
That sounds a bit complicated. There's a lot more to owning a magazine, I see. You said when you bought the magazine, the company wasn't doing so well, and then you rebranded it. So maybe for the people who don't know On the Land, who's the audience and what is it all about?
So originally Lifestyle Block was kind of aimed at like the typical lifestyler, I suppose, someone who's got, and so I was on land, but I pivoted it in a way so that it was not just about lifestyle farmers or lifestyle block owners, but also anyone who has an interest in growing food and keeping animals and, I guess, creating a resilient system on their property and within their community. So I've broadened it out. So I guess that the target reader is anyone who's wanting to connect with their land and their food and their resources in a meaningful way, creating regenerative resilient systems. So there are so many people out there who are doing that, who are, I guess, not only gardening, but they've found a way to limit what they're buying in. They're making compost. They're basically limiting the resources that they have to purchase, and they're using all the resources that they have on their property to kind of go back into the system. It's like a microcosm of a really self-sufficient system that you might see on a bigger farm or something like that.
How does the community here in Raglan inspire you? Do they have maybe a similar mindset?
Yeah, Raglan's a hotspot. It's amazing. Like, one issue had, like, most of the stories were from Raglan. Mm-hmm. And, like, which is not, yeah, I realized after the fact that it seemed like it was a really Raglan-focused issue, which isn't really fair to everyone else. But, yeah, there's just so many operators here that are doing amazing things. And I've got a huge list of story ideas from Raglan property owners, or like out there at Ruapuki or Tiuku or further afield. And yeah, just so many kind of permaculture practitioners and homesteaders, flower farms and market gardeners, just so much inspirational pursuits happening around here.
And that's just how it goes. That's how I get my stories too. I just get inspired by the people around me.
Yeah.
And just, and there's just so many inspiring people in Raglan. So it makes sense that there's a lot of stories around here. So when we go back to the whole thing of owning a magazine, you said the previous owners weren't doing so well and you rebranded the magazine. So what are you doing differently now than before?
So magazines have been kind of on the decline for so long, and a lot of them still, not anymore, but they were operating in the same way they've always done, with like big offices and a lot of staff and huge expenses and overheads. And that was from a time when they were doing really well. So it just couldn't support that type of expense anymore. And I think in this case, the company had slimmed down a lot, but they still had quite big overheads. So what I've done is I've just stripped it back. It's just me and some freelancers and an art director all on contract. And yeah, we just make it work. Kind of the smell of an oily rag is the expression. So it's like, we keep the costs really low. And I obviously like pay photographers and writers to do the work. But I do a lot of it myself as well, which keeps costs down. And it's just a case of hustling. It's just a case of finding ways to make it work, seeking out new opportunities and partnerships. So with the magazine, there are three income streams. There is the subscriptions and then the sales at like a retail store, like a Countdown or a bookstore. And then there's advertising income, because a lot of businesses still like to advertise in magazines because we've got kind of a captive market, like the monopoly on the lifestyle block market. So if you're an advertiser of, say, a greenhouse, it's the perfect way to like get your products in front of people. And I think with what's happening with digital marketing, people are getting quite fatigued by like scrolling and seeing ads, and they just don't even pay attention to them anymore. But I think with a magazine and you're holding it in your hand, it really captures you, because it's so rare these days to hold something and just be pulled into it. And that's the whole appeal. There's like a renaissance for print, because it can be really effective to just not only tell stories but get ideas out there. Just because of that novelty of holding something in your hand, like a book, you know, in this attention deficit world that we live in.
And you brought one of the magazines, and the first thing I did, I opened it and smelled it. And it just smells so good. And maybe, can you hear this? Yeah, there's something different about holding the print magazine in your hands. And also talking about attention span, I guess like you're focusing way more on the story and not just scrolling.
Yeah, it's so intentional. You're not picking it up because you're distracted, and you're seeking a distraction. You're picking it up like you would a book, because you actually want to pick it up and you want to set aside some time away from all the noise to actually digest it and to enjoy it. And that's really cool, because, you know, that used to be what we did no matter what, but with phones and with social media and all the screens, that's becoming quite rare to do. So I think it's now the exception. And I really get a lot out of just picking something physical up and just enjoying it, because it just seems like such an antidote to the otherwise endless, incessant stimuli that you get from, phones and iPads and screens.
For sure.
And, yeah.
It seems like you're going a bit against the grain, because people say print is dead, and but you're really making it work, and you're also growing the magazine. What's your secret?
Well, I mean, that's an ongoing puzzle. So people say print is dead, But in the States, they're actually having like a big print boom because of the thing I've just talked about, like more people going back away from their phones and picking up something with intention and really wanting to just enjoy something without the noise and without their phones. And yeah, there's a few indie publishers in the States that are doing really well, and they're just investing heavily in the photography, making it really high quality, not like glossy cheap paper, but like really beautiful matte paper, amazing journalism, amazing writing, amazing photography, and people are really loving it and actually paying for it. In New Zealand, it's a bit more difficult because we don't really have the population to support that type of thing. But it's something I'm experimenting with. So yeah, we could always grow more. I'm really happy with like the brand awareness it's getting, because people know about it in this community, and people love it. I've never had so much more positive feedback. I think it's always going to be tricky financially because of the costs in New Zealand. We don't have any paper mills operating here, so all the paper's imported. We use post, so like the cost of that is just crazy, especially with the gas prices and all. So yeah, it's always going to be quite lean, but I love it, and it's just a fun way to spend my time. I do freelancing as well on the side, to just like, it's not my full-time gig. So it's more just like a hobby, I guess, or like a side hustle. So yeah, I combine all those things to make it work together.
What other magazines are you writing for?
I write not for other magazines, but I write for some digital publications. Like I was doing some law journalism, so I write for the Law Association. And who else? And I was doing freelancing for, lately it's just been the Law Association, okay. Yeah.
I read this article in the spin-off that you wrote as a guest author, and it's about your magazine On the Land. And it says that you're actually working full time up to 70 hours, which is crazy. But I think maybe that's your secret too, because it's your passion and you don't mind working a lot on it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I guess if I'm doing something on my land, something physical, like I've found a really good tree that grows really well where I am, that's content for the magazine. So in that way, I'm actually, whenever I'm not even working, I'm working. It contributes to the production. So it's a way to do it without actually, you know, stressing myself out or feeling like I'm getting bogged down in work. But yeah, when it's your passion, you just do it, and it doesn't feel like work, and it's so much fun and it's so enjoyable. And yeah, the content is always inspirational and always really enjoyable to put together.
But I mean, a 70-hour week is pretty crazy, and you're juggling most of it yourself. You said you have some photographers and contractors. Yeah, but I mean, respect, 70 hours a week, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, that's not every week, but I guess that's during print weeks when things get really heavy. But yeah, I just kind of make it work, and then you have a bit of a break afterwards. So it's not consistently that level of intensity, because I think I'd probably be burnt out. But yeah, there are some periods in there in the print cycle that get really heavy.
Free to be ourselves. Free FM 89.0.
From rhythms so soft they break your heart to lyrics that crash through walls of injustice, Echoes of Dissent is about the music that challenges power and the people bold enough to create it. From civil rights to climate justice, we uncover the stories and the people behind the sounds. Because when voices rise together, they don't just make music, they make change.
Echoes of Dissent, Thursdays at 4 on Free FM 89.0 and available on all podcasting platforms.
Free FM is a member of CAMA, the Community Access Media Alliance. Check out cama.nz. The website has heaps of resources and it looks great. Thanks to our friends at Meta Digital.
How's the contracting journalism in New Zealand at the moment? I'm a freelance journalist, and I do some work for German media back home. And it's actually been really tough. I've been writing for Der Spiegel, which is like actually leading European magazines, but they don't have the budget for external pieces at the moment. They're telling me they like my stories, but sorry, we cannot pay you.
Yeah.
How's it looking like in New Zealand?
Yeah, it depends where you go, I guess, and kind of what niche you're doing. But I feel like the mainstream media outlets in New Zealand aren't taking external writers that much. Mm-hmm. Like they're all just keeping it in house. For the indie publishers like me, like we kind of depend on those freelancers. So yeah, there's always if I wrote the whole magazine myself, it wouldn't be very varied or diverse. It would be pretty boring, I think, because it's just all my perspective. So I've got columnists who kind of write on their various fields or point of expertise. So like some really cool people in that community, like Angela Clifford of The Food Farm and Kath Irvine, all really heavy hitters in the kind of permaculture world. Gillian Swinton, who's a real awesome homesteader in Central Otago. Yeah, a whole bunch of them. And then the features, I write one or two of them. Sometimes I have to write more, but I try to outsource those to good freelance feature writers. Yeah, and I try to pay them better than what they would get, you know, if they went to just a kind of online freelancing site, which I feel like they don't pay very well. They have like 10 cents a word or something. So yeah, I try and pay above the market rate.
Yeah, freelance journalism is a tough field, also with the payment. And another challenge is AI. AI is taking over our jobs.
Yeah,
that's what
yeah.
many people say.
Yeah.
How do you feel about AI? Do you use it as a creative tool or what do you think about AI?
I've kind of like, I drew a line in the sand that I wouldn't get it to write any stories for me, and I haven't let it do that. I do use it for like, because at the start I was like, I'm not going to use it at all. But then I realized I kind of had been, because I use like an audio transcription service that, you know, you do your interview and then you upload your audio and it transcribes it for you.
I love that.
And it's a version.
Pretty good.
Yeah. It saved me so much time, and I've been doing that for years. And if I didn't do it, freelancing wouldn't really be viable. And it's essentially AI. So I just thought, well, if I'm using it to do that, then I should, you know, just see where I can streamline certain things. So yeah, I use it sometimes to summarize like notes and quotes, or if I need to do some research. But I always verify it, just as you would any Google search, like fact check it and make sure, because you can't trust it completely. So yeah, I use it with caution. But I'm always going to favor human writers and human photographers, and I'd never get it to write in place of a human, because I just feel like that's what I want to support. I want to actually nurture good writing and good photography in New Zealand, and I don't want to get a machine to do that, even if it saves me, you know, $1,000. Like, it's just not, there's no point to it really. Yeah.
And AI is probably improving, but I think at least these days you can tell if it's written by AI or by a human.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it really
yeah.
does make a difference.
And it can't talk to, you know, it can't interview people, and that's the whole, that's the essence of feature writing, is actually going out and meeting people and talking with them and getting to know them and writing their story in a way that really captures the essence of what they're about. And AI can't do that.
Also connecting to the people when you go out and interview them, you kind of have to be open to receive their story, I feel like, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah,
like even if you said, hey, can you write a story about this farmer who's doing, you know, this amazing stuff, and they've got an off-grid hydro system that they built themselves or whatever, and you gave it all the information, I feel like at this stage the piece would still be like really hacky. It would just be like, what doesn't know what it's talking about, you know? It's made so much up, and it's fabricated things, and it's really cheesy in places. But a good feature writer will take longer, but they'll do an amazing job, and they'll hook you into the story, and you won't be kind of surprised at how tacky it is.
Talking about good stories, like I said, we have the recent issue here right now, the recent issue of On the Land. What's your favorite story of the recent issue?
We did a piece on unschooling. So we interviewed a couple that live on 800 acres up in Northland, and just talking with them about how they how they unschool their kids and basically intentionally move them away from the mainstream education system using their land as the classroom. And it's just really awesome what people are doing and what you can do with the right type of system and the right type of thinking. And they made some awesome points about, you know, why they're doing it and what it brings to them and their kids. And yeah, I felt that was a beautiful thing to explore. And it goes hand in hand with, I guess, what people are doing on the land as well, because they're wanting to, I guess, encourage their kids to know everything about growing and farming. And if you want to give them that type of education, I would say that's pretty important, especially right now with what's happening in the world. If you know how to grow food, I would say that's invaluable skills.
Real people, real life. Free FM 89.0.
I'm Andrew Johnstone, host of a new show called The Joy of Classical Music. And yes, we'll be featuring well-known favourites and the great classics, but mostly it's a journey of discovery into the outer reaches of this vast and extraordinary genre. We'll be touching on the prettiest and most melodic. We'll be visiting the avant-garde, journeying into the deep past and reaching into the future. So join me, and I hope you have as much fun in the listening as I have had in the making.
The Joy of Classical Music, 10 p.m. Mondays on Free FM 89.0.
Can we talk about that a little bit more? So why do you think those stories are important at the moment?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a huge like resurgence in food growing because of what's happening with the cost of living and the price of fuel. It seems similar, if not more, to COVID times in terms of the interest and intensity. And, you know, you can have a job that you think is safe, and then global geopolitics and technology come along and wipe it out within a matter of weeks. But, you know, growing food, that's not going to be replaced anytime soon by robots, I think, especially on a small local scale. So if you're incorporating that into your, how you're educating your kids or what you're doing yourself in terms of building your skill set, I think that's a really wise way to go. Yeah, because it's about harnessing your own resource and taking back control and establishing food sovereignty. I think those are really important things to pursue in this day and age.
Yeah, everything feels so uncertain at the moment.
Yeah.
So talking about these things and also the future, maybe, where do you see your magazine in the future, or what do you wish?
So I'm just on the verge of launching a big crowdfunding campaign, which probably not ideal timing with what's happening in the world, but it is what it is. But the thing is, I never started with any working capital, and everyone said at the start, you need to do a crowdfund because you need that basically to grow the business and invest in marketing. And I've never really done that. So I've never been able to do stuff to actually make the magazine, I guess, really well known throughout New Zealand. And when you're doing everything yourself, certain things fall behind. You can either put all your time into the editorial or into the marketing. But if you try to do everything, some things inevitably start to suffer. So this is basically a plan to have that capital to bring on people that can help me with the marketing, that can actually grow the business. But those essential things every business needs to do to survive. We're also going to launch a scholarship for a young writer for a year to basically get paid for their work, a writer or a photographer or both, so that they can write stories and produce content for On the Land and get paid and learn as well if they're new to the craft. Other than that, it's just basically allowing me to continue to pay writers and photographers to do really good work. So that's on the cards, the crowdfund, and then just business as usual as well.
Talking about crowdfunding or funding in general, do you actually have partnerships in the sense that they just fund you, or is it mainly like advertising partnerships?
I've got some kind of brand partners that consistently advertise with me, and so that's what they get out of it, is they get to promote their products and brands in the magazine or on our digital channels. And obviously those are sponsored pieces and sponsored spots. So yeah, that's a type of funding that I get, but I'm not a charity. I'm not a not-for-profit. So it's, everyone who's, I guess, every business that's, paying me is getting something in return. So yeah, that's like kind of transactional. That's how it works. But I'm always looking for new partnerships as well, and yeah, aligning myself with like-minded businesses that really love what I'm about and I love what they're about. And yeah, I've had some really cool collaborations over the last 2 years with just businesses that I really admire.
Mm. So for the listeners who want to know more about On The Land, or maybe want to reach out, contribute, or just get in touch, what's the best way to reach you?
They can contact me on my email, which is editor@ontheland.nz, or they can just go to my website, which is www.ontheland.nz, and yeah, there are contact details there or contact forms, and you can learn about the magazine and the stories that we publish, and yeah, see what we can offer in terms of subscriptions. And we have other books and kind of special editions that we sell as well for homesteaders and people interested in self-sufficiency. So the website's a pretty good resource to go to and learn more about it.
Perfect. Maybe one last question. What's in stores for you for your personal life? What are you looking forward to? Any big dreams?
Yeah, I guess I'm just looking forward to growing more food on my property, and the trees I planted a few years ago are now all over my head. So that's a really good feeling, because with a bare block, there's just nothing there. It's just grass. It was a former horse paddock. So seeing the forest emerge is such a buzz. And I just, yeah, I guess transforming my property into a really abundant landscape and foodscape is on, a big highlight for me and a big goal. And yeah, just turning the magazine into a really thriving, abundant operation as well. That's my big goal and my big dream.
Keep us updated about that. I'm sure we will read about it on the land as well. Thank you so much for coming in today, Michael.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to How to Make It Work with me, Annika. Catch us live on Raglan Community Radio every Monday at 12:30, or listen anytime on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, keep finding your way and keep making it work.
Local and independent. Free FM 89.0. Discover something new in the Free FM Music Zone. It's where we dig deep into the music we love with shows hosted by serious music fans. But there's always space for more. If you're an expert in any specific music genre and have the material, knowledge and time, we want to talk to you. Find out more at freefm.org.nz under Get Involved. The Free FM Music Zone, nightly from 10 on 89.0 FM. Or ask your smart speaker to play Free FM 89.0.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.